Since it is not that often that we read from the Song of Solomon in this chapel, we will read it from the New Jerusalem Bible. I awakened you under the apple tree where your mother conceived you, where she who bore you, there she conceived you. And the response of the beloved is this: set me like a seal on your heart, like a seal on your arm, for love is strong as death, passion as relentless as Sheol. The flash of it is the flash of fire, a flame of Yahweh himself. Love no flood can quench, no torrents drown. Were a man to offer all his family wealth to buy love, contempt is all that he would gain. Like viruses in the winter, certain thoughts spread from preacher to preacher like a contagion. A phrase attributed to Billy Graham that the Missouri Synod was a sleeping giant, a rather unusual metaphor, began appearing in sermon after sermon like a bad penny. And then there was the line from the evangelist James Kennedy, "Where would you be if you died tonight?" Supposedly, those who died in the daylight hours would not be concerned with this. A more academically respectable virus was breathed into Lutheran nasal passages by Bishop Anders Nygren's book, Agape and Eros. Preachers, whose linguistic range rarely went beyond English, were giving sermons on the three Greek words for love, the highest form of which was agape, a love that expects no reward, the love by which God sent the Son to redeem the world. Coming in a distant second was phileo, to love as a friend. Problematic is that John uses this second-rate kind of love to describe how the Father and the Son relate to one another. The divine three persons exist in perfect friendship with one another in a perfect community. Add to this that Abraham believed on God and was honored by God by being named his friend. And then there's the hymn the people like, but the clergy don't, "What a Friend We Have in Jesus." Having a friend in high places, especially that one, is not that bad at all. At the bottom of the love heap was Eros, a self-serving passion, unquenchable desire for somebody else, irrational infatuation, seeking self-gratification. Marriage is institutionalized eros. I was going to say sacramental, but I can't. A thought that takes on religious overtones in speaking of the Holy Communion as the marriage supper of the Lamb. With its privileges widely exercised before marriage, classical romances between otherwise unattached men and women have reached the point of extinction, except here in Fort Wayne, where recently courting is a way of life, announcements of engagement are standard fare on the chapel prayer list. This morning, the Eros tradition erupts with the Song of Solomon. Ironically, the one book in the Bible that is all about Eros is used to locate a passage to support the perpetual virginity of Mary. We could avoid erotic embarrassment by pushing the Song of Solomon out of the Bible, something which Luther did with James and Hebrews, but we can't, because Jesus singled out Solomon as that one human being whose glory approached the natural beauty of lilies, and to Jesus, Solomon was only second in wisdom. This ought to put a kibosh on the old saw heard even around here that Solomon did not make it into heaven. Solomon did, and he made it big time with three inspired books to his credit. The title, the other title, the Song of Songs, might mean that its literary form is the purest distillation of poetic poetry, a finely refined cognac, a sonnet permeated by the Spirit's inspiration. The debate between science and the Bible and how the world came into being is only a sideshow, because most Americans, churched or unchurched, prefer the Adam and Eve story to Darwin's Origin of Species. Romeo and Juliet are the classical lovers who die before their romance comes to full bloom. Adam and Eve are the primeval lovers whose romance begets fratricide. In the human psyche, and part of Israel's faith, is a longing for an original paradise where man lives in harmony with creation and pure erotic love is untainted by lust. If the angel blocks the gate, Solomon lets us look over Eden's walls. I awakened you under the apple tree, where your mother conceived you, where she bore you, she conceived you. Love, conception, and birth all happened under an apple tree. Chocolate is a lover's delight, but the ripe fruit of deep passion hangs from the apple tree. Genesis does not specify the species of the tree of life, but my vote goes for the grape vine, because Jesus called himself the vine, whose fruit became the blood he offered to God as a drink offering, so that it could become for us a sweet potion of immortality. But for the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, the tree of passion and desire, the apple has no competition. I awakened you under the apple tree. Some know the song, and those who know it are a little older. Don't sit under the apple tree with anybody else but me. Under the apple tree, passion began, passion thrived, and passion's fruit was born, just as Solomon said. The impassioned suitor wears his heart on his sleeve. He goes through hell and high water to coax the object of his affections. He tolerates no rivals, and those who remain on the field he destroys with an unrelenting jealousy. His love is so hot that a flooding river cannot extinguish it. The water of the deepest lake cannot assuage his thirst for the one he loves. Erotic love emerges from the depths of who we are. It is not for sale. It consumes the one who loves, and in destroying self gives life to the one who is loved. Now would be the time to sing the once popular song as a hymn, "Love is a Many Splendid Thing." Well, it is. Speaking of God's love, as the Holy Ghost does, as agape, is theologically perfect, but it is too clinical. Eros drops with the perspiration of emotion. By loving us, God gains something for himself, and he satisfies his deepest desires. In his Advent cantata, "Wachet auf, ruf uns die Stimme," Johann Sebastian Bach replicated God's heart, beating and longing for the church, and the church's impatience for her bridegroom. In Hosea, the sequel to the Song of Solomon's, God's love for Israel is unrequited. God, the rejected lover, persists in passionately involving his whole being in our redemption. Solomon is the infatuated lover, Christ more so. He is the bridegroom, we are the bride. He pursues, we are the pursued. Here, this chapel, this church, is the chamber where he spuns out his love sonnets, and he approaches us in his sacrament to join us to himself. Now hear again the words of the Holy Ghost. God says, "I awakened you under the apple tree, where your mother conceived you, and where she bore you, she conceived you." The church responds, "Set me like a seal on your heart, like a seal on your arm. For love is strong as death, passion as relentless as Sheol. The flash of passion is the flash of fire, a flame of Yahweh himself. Love no flood can quench, no torments drown. Or we could just as well end with the book of Revelation, and we will. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from heaven from God, prepared as a bride, adorned for a husband. So now you know what Jesus said when he said, what he meant when he said, "Behold, a greater than Solomon is here."